Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by their other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at acsmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Today is Wednesday, January 24th. And guys, with the NFL playoffs here and the NBA season in full swing, Bet Online has you covered with all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and scores. With all the additional odds, lines, trends, and info from both on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get in on the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on that first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. John, my voice may sound hoarse, and I know it's been a while since we talked on these airwaves. We probably didn't pick the best time to come back because I was lucky enough to be in attendance at the Lions-Buccaneers game, and I have had this slight ringing in my ear for basically the last 2 days. And I have to say, it feels good to feel something watching football again. It really does.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy for every Lions fan right now. I like the idea of non-Lions fans not wanting to hear about the Lions and coming to a Michigan State podcast and hearing about it. How was your experience?
It was
electric.
It was incredible. It was so loud. I've been lucky enough to be in a lot of loud buildings, sporting events, many of them Michigan State related. But this was, it's funny because at the beginning you're like, okay, yeah, it's loud in here, but it's a playoff game, whatever. It's not bad. And then when C.J. Gardner-Johnson, C.D. Deuce, kicked Baker Mayfield off on the first drive, it reached a level where I was like, oh, okay. But that's actual real, I can't see straight noise. And then the pick at the end by Derek Barnes was, even though the game should never have been that, Tampa should not have had a chance to go score. The Lions should have put him away a couple different times.
It was a part of the script, dude. You got to follow the script.
Honestly, man, it's fine. Because that seeing that in that moment was so cool. And it did remind me, it's funny, you and I were kind of talking a little bit before this, and you made a great point. It did, I think, contextualize how important and how much Michigan State athletics mean to me. Because as amazing as that opportunity was, I was kind of doing my stack rank in my head of where did this fall on the all-time sporting events that I've been to, where does it stack up? And I realized that it's probably and this is going to sound so privileged, but it's probably in the top five. I think it's in the top five, on my personal list, Rose Bowl will never be that. If anything, this solidifies me that will simply never. I don't think there's anything I could do to top it unless Michigan State went and won the national championship in either sport. And I was like,
by cheating or not cheating?
Listen, man, if there's not going to be punishment, let's cheat. I've always said it. We've said it many times. I'd prefer they don't. But if they're not going to punish it, then that's the game. Then let's play the game. And Big Ten tournament win over Michigan with Cassius was a huge one that I was at. Big Ten, the game before the Rose Bowl when Michigan State beat Ohio State in Indianapolis. Three right there. UConn Final Four in Detroit. That Lions game was probably the second best sporting event I've been to in that building. But it was still unbelievable, so incredible, and I'm so lucky to have been there, and I'm lucky that it was number five on my list. But you said that before, so I want to give you a chance to elaborate as well.
I had an embarrassing moment take place on Sunday, which I was watching Michigan State at Maryland basketball, and then later watching the Lions game, and kind of like you're saying, experiencing a little too similar of highs and lows. And the two situations were so drastically different and importance. And so maybe that's just like my threshold at all times or something. But I don't know, like MSU hoops, I think is a little bit of like, you can find a little bit of personality, your own personality in something like that. Same with like the D'Antonio years of football. I think people found a little bit of their personality in it. And it kind of make, and plus going to the school, if you did, or you have a relationship with the school in a special way, there's that extra thing for some people. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, like I'm going to, I think I just learned that MSU hoops was 1A and maybe it's just one. Like, I don't know. That's a bad thing lately for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel kind of the same way about football, and basketball's right up there too, but I don't know. There's just more emotion in it with Michigan State for some reason. I also think that it's just so the Lions stuff is just so surreal. Like it feels ridiculous. Like when you hear people say the stats of how long it's been since they've done any of the things they've done, you're like, this is awesome. And it doesn't like, there was no expectation. There was no like consistent. I don't know, like that. It is incredible. And if they were to go on and do more than they've done already, it's like, holy, like it's like when the Cubs won the World Series, it's like, it's an all time moment. But if you compared that to what it would mean if Michigan State football did it or basketball did it, it's going to be, it would be tough to beat. It'd be tough to beat. I say all that hoping very, very much so that the Lions do continue this on. But
you know what the crazy thing is that like we look constantly ever since, I don't know what changed in our lives where we were like, we can't spend as much time on Michigan State hoops or Michigan State basketball unless they are building towards a national championship. Otherwise, like, what are we doing? I don't have time to be Minnesota football. Like I don't.
Yeah.
I just, if there's no way, like, then what are we doing? And I think we started to like map out how far away
they've
been, you know, and for not having even played a game, I am feeling very comfortable and confident with this coach so far. And that maybe I'm just setting myself up to fail. But what do you think?
Oh, about Jonathan Smith?
Just like that, I have all of a sudden not ruled out that this guy could win a national championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think we started talking about it in those terms when Mel Tucker started talking about it in those terms, to be totally honest. Like, the goals of the program flipped overnight when it was, we're going to get to the big boy table, we're going to recruit every part of the country, we're going to start wearing, you know, watches and doing photo shoots and all that other stuff. It just was like, oh, okay, that's the standard now. Based on 1-11 win season. And I mean, we're recorded on this show saying how much we love that experience. And we love that that's the stated goal, which is great. And it should be. And I stand by a lot of that. But when it goes so poorly back in the other direction, it is disheartening. And I think what I love about what I've seen so far from Jonathan Smith is that he's personality wise, like, complete opposite, and or maybe not personality wise, because Mel wasn't a very outspoken guy, but in terms of just like approach to building a roster and just the level of calm that he's brought to the program, it's been great. I think a lot of the things that he's done, and I think Alan Haller, we've given him credit time and time again, it seems to thus far that he hit another home run. Because what Smith has done, I think if you look at like little micro trends within his time so far, they're very encouraging. I think the chief among those is, of course, Michigan State had a lot of guys enter the transfer portal and they didn't bring them all back, right? But
yeah, and like
bring and kind of a lot of the good ones back.
Yeah. And people were like, oh no, we're losing so many guys. And then, you know, I don't know, it was kind of like, well, they did go 4-8, you know, it's just slow down a little bit on, you know, being all in.
Yeah. So it's hard to not get excited when you know, Derek Harmon, who's one of the better players on the roster, enters and ends up, you know, coming back to the team. I think that was the one that kind of stood out to me so far. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So, like, you're going to come back. I feel like Gino Vandermark, maybe I'm getting that one wrong, but I feel like he either entered or there were rumors of him entering. I think Chuck Brantley entered and came back. So, like, good players. Ethan Boyd, I believe, might have been one of those as well. So, and I could be getting that wrong, but a handful of different guys entered and then came back. That says something about what a coach, the type of message he's sending, because essentially those guys are like, well, I'm a free agent now. Anybody can come and get me, can come and sign me. And you know that they all had offers from other places. I mean, Derek Harmon was, a lot of people thought he was gone to Auburn. Right. And instead he turns around and all of a sudden is back in green and white. And, you know, I just think that says a lot about the message that they're hearing from the coaches and what they feel is kind of possible with this new regime. So hard to say that it's been anything but successful in that regard. And I love the way that he's pieced together some of the, he's used the portal very strategically. And in that strategic use, we've already talked about Aiden Giles time and time again, but he is going to be, by the way, an 18-year-old true sophomore with 3 years of eligibility left next year, who's probably going to be starting and is currently rated as the number one quarterback in the portal. If he only pulled one player and it was Aiden Giles, it's an overwhelming success. But instead, he went out and obviously has brought in a handful of different players. And a lot of them, I mean, Jack Velling, another player, the tight end, he pulled from Oregon State. I'm sure we've talked about these guys over, you know, the last time we recorded. But he pulled them strategically from his old school. But he also went outside. And it was mostly like guys that aren't necessarily super young wild card type of, you know, it seemed as though under Tucker, that the strategy was kind of like, oh, you went to Florida? Come on down. Oh, yeah. You went to, you know, you played at Georgia? Come on down. It's more, they're honestly kind of like grabbing veteran guys from other teams. I mean, TJ Sheffield from Purdue is a great example. Guy that played and was contributed there, but, you know, never a superstar, but is just going to kind of come and bring this like stabilizing force, sort of just raise the floor for Michigan State. I want to do want to highlight one other player that they just got, and I'm going to look up his name because I can't remember. It's, yes, 3 days ago, they landed an FCS All-American offensive tackle from Holy Cross.
Holy Cross, yeah.
Yes. So, football powerhouse, of course.
Hey, if you're an All-American, I like the it doesn't seem like a huge stretch to be a rotational player.
Yep, not at all. And he goes along with the guard for Tanner Miller, who was the second team All Pac-12.
Stash.
Yeah. So we love it. I mean, Newman, this kid played at Brother Rice in Bloomfield Hills. He has one season left, 6'4", 310 pounds. Like you said, he was an all conference and all league selection and had offers from other programs, including two SEC programs in Kentucky and Vanderbilt. But listen. He's just adding at positions that need to be added at. It feels like there's some, I guess here's what it really boils down to, and then I'll stop monologuing. It feels like he has a game plan.
Dude, I was just about to say. Plan. Yes. Yes. Keep going. Sorry.
Oh, that was it. It feels like there's an adult in the room. He kind of has like, okay, a vision. Here's how I'm going to build it. Here's how I'm going to go about it. Not just throw a bunch of crap at the wall and hope that it sticks.
I wholeheartedly agree, because I am very interested in just understanding what the vision is. You know, it's like we hired a guy, you know, and he was in an interview and he said all the right things. He's like, you know, we're going to take this place, you know, from where it's at to, you know, Fortune 100 to Fortune top 10 as a CEO. And we're like, yeah, we love that. And then he gets the job and then we're like, so how are you going to do that? And he's like, oh, I don't know, but that's what we should do. And it's like, oh,
right.
You didn't actually know like how to do it. You like kind of knew, and you're reading books on the fly. I see them stacked up on your desk on like how to do lead. But what like we had talked about it all the time. Mel Tucker had no, like, teams had no identity. They weren't like, right. And I'm just excited to watch a football team and be like, I know that we are aiming to be really good at this and really good at this. And if those things happen, we have a good chance of winning. I had no idea what that was with Mel Tucker. I was like, I hope we score. Don't know how that's going to happen because I don't know what we're trying to do on offense or defense ever. So I'm thrilled for, like you said, the adult in the room with a potential vision that can be articulated. With that, there are a ton of great coaches in the Big Ten. The conference has never had more quality, but also has never had this much quantity. And, you know, Jonathan Smith being an amazing hire, the Big Ten is becoming, like we talked about, one of the two super conferences. And with that comes talent at the head coaching position as guys like Jed Fish leave the Big 12 for a better situation. Jonathan Smith as well. And even Kurt Cignetti, who absolutely was going to get out of, I believe, the Sun Belt to get in the Big Ten. So, you know, a lot of new faces. And anytime you see an opening come, it's going to be filled by one of the best Big 12 or ACC coaches, I imagine, in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, a ton of turnover at the head. There's always turnover, right? The coaching carousel spins every single year. There's always, you know, one or two programs that are big and, become open. But in the Big Ten specifically now, like you said, it's consolidated. The big jobs aren't, oh, you're the best team in the Pac-12, which, you know, that just takes on a different definition. If you want one of the true blue power teams, you're pretty much going to one of two conferences at this point with a couple of limited exceptions. And within the new 18-team Big Ten, you're going to end up having at least five new head coaches. There could be potential for another change here and there, but you're at least getting a new coach at Michigan State, Northwestern. Actually, Northwestern is just a promotion, but technically, you know, year over year. Indiana, Michigan, it's looking in all likelihood, is going to have to replace Jim Harbaugh, who it appears is headed to the L.A. Chargers. And then Washington. Well, those last two are the two that I think we should talk about a little bit. We're not going to beat around the – well, let's just talk about Michigan first because – we'll just get it out of the way. We can't hide from it forever. We all saw what happened. Nobody enjoyed it. That's kind of it. Harbaugh, it appears, is actually going to get a job. It hasn't been like as ironclad, I think, as most would have expected it to be. But the reports as of literally today that we're recording this is that he's headed to the Chargers. He's taking Jesse Minter with him and his son, Jay. If those things are all true, losing Harbaugh is something they've probably have been bracing for a while, but losing Minter with him, which is now Mike McDonald Jesse Minter have like left in the last couple of years, that's arguably as important, maybe not bigger just because of Harbaugh being who he is, but as important a loss for them. So in order for them to maintain stability, it seems logically like the only real move for them is to promote Sharon Moore to head coach, right?
Right. I mean, so, he already has experience. Hell, he coached how many games last year because Harbaugh was suspended?
Several.
Seriously. Several. So like he's proven himself a bit.
Yeah. I mean, he deserves a shot. I can't argue with the logic behind it. But what they are facing as difficult a follow-up to a national championship as you can really face. They're replacing both coordinators. Yes, Moore will still be there. He might even still be calling it plays, but the fact of the matter is you'll have a new coordinator. You're replacing a defensive coordinator. You're losing a ton of talent. Not to say that they don't have talent on the roster, because they absolutely do, but you're losing stars across the board at every level of both sides of the ball. So there's a big, I hesitate to call it a rebuild, but like, it's a reshuffling for them there with a new head coach. So big full play for Michigan. But the big one, really, I think the most impactful, maybe not the most impactful, but an equally impactful one is Washington. And it's maybe not even Washington, but it's the reason why Washington is open is because Kalen DeBoer is now the head coach of the University of Alabama. I have to pause really quickly and give Nick Saban just thank you. Thank you for being who you were. Thank you for, you know, the fact that you ever coached at Michigan State is incredible. I know you left. Can't blame you. Do your thing. But he's the best football coach to ever live. And his parting gift was to give Michigan about 36 hours in the news cycle before he decided to retire and completely change the subject and give them no, like the, I appreciated so much that like the grace period and the window and fun, hey, Michigan won a national championship, lasted like literally like 2 days.
I don't even think they had a parade. There was any, if it did, Saban, no one knows.
Saban retired and everyone's like, oh, Jim Harbaugh's leaving like 2 days later. I personally loved that little touch.
It was beautiful. And honestly, kind of the way the country felt about Michigan, quote unquote, winning it all. It was like, okay. Like,
got it.
Sweet, guys. It just was kind of a beautiful thing. And, you know, truly the best coach we've ever seen, maybe will ever see. And Kalen DeBoer takes on an absolutely impossible situation, but I would be thrilled to take on that type of situation. However, I think I'd note, like, Washington was about, they would sign him to a life contract. I guarantee you that was like the counteroffer, right? Because that's all you got, right? And if you really wanted this, you'd have to do something ridiculous. And that was for losing in the playoffs. He's going to go to Alabama. And if he loses in the playoffs there, they will fire him. And that's his best case scenario. Just having job loss. Because I'm afraid it will happen to his like house and car, like property vandalism. Like, this, you have to win. Like, and it's not just like, oh, I have to win. Like, Saban probably was driven out of fear for his life because the South is so crazy.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's just a totally different – the DeBoer entire thing is fascinating to me because on paper, you're like, oh, I mean, look what he did at Washington. Look what he did at Fresno. He made, you know, Indiana's offense great. I might have even missed a stop in there. But – if you look a little bit under the hood with his teams, he's never really had to like, I mean, he's only been in any of these jobs for like, what, 2 years? I mean, he was at Washington for 2 years, maybe three.
Yeah. Yeah. He took over for Jimmy Lake like 2 years ago.
I think Fresno, he was there for 2 years and he won. And Indiana, he was offensive coordinator there for a little while, but he's never really had to like recruit and build and maintain a roster. Because if you look at when he was at Fresno State, it was Jake Haener, who was awesome, who he inherited, who was the quarterback there. And if he got to Washington, like, he didn't recruit Jalen Polk. He didn't recruit Rome Odunze. He didn't recruit Jalen McMillan. He did kind of recruit Jeremy Bernard, who's now going to Bama, which is hysterical.
Moving on up, man.
Yeah, good for him, man. Just Jeremy, attaboy.
That's awesome.
But I mean, he did bring Michael Penix with him, but it's not like he identified Penix out of high school. I guess maybe he did at Indiana, but I guess the point is that he's going to win with inherited talent, but he's proven he can do that. But I'm more interested in like years 3 through 5 of DeBoer, assuming he's good enough in years 1 and 2 to get there. Because you just don't know. Like, this guy's not from the South. He's never really recruited down there. Like, there's just a lot of like, I wonder if Bama maybe got caught a little bit with their pants down when like a couple of the big names out there, Dan Lanning from Oregon specifically, Sark. Like, I gotta think that they got some phone calls. I refuse to believe that Kalen DeBoer was the first choice for Alabama. Like, no, not to take anything away from him, but like, he's not from there. He's got no connections. Like, Sark and Lanning, Sark was in the playoff and lost to DeBoer. And ironically, Lanning also lost to DeBoer twice, so maybe that's why he got the job. But either way, those two guys, you would have thought with the level of connections they had and just like their recruiting down there, that they might have gotten some looks. But, you know, it's just going to be fascinating. It was a fascinating hire to me. I can't wait to learn more about whenever, you know, it all gets out at some point in time, what all went on behind the scenes. But it's pretty interesting.
I have a theory, because I think you're absolutely right. If you peek under the hood about DeBoer, it's like, now hold on.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will say, my belief is that Alabama in that situation said to themselves, all right, let's go get the guy that knows ball better than anyone in the country. Like, let's make a bet on who that is. And I think Kalen DeBoer makes a great case for it. That dude knows ball. The pre-snap stuff he's doing with Washington, you watched it against Michigan State. That was DeBoer. He was literally telling Penix what to do with the pre-snap motion, and then all Penix had to do was put the ball in the right spot. Mm-hmm. Not taking away from how great Penix is, because he's incredible. I'm just saying, like, DeBoer maximized what you could do with him, I believe. And I wonder if Alabama was like, listen, we'll take care of everything else. We got guys for that. Like,
yeah,
recruiting, donor stuff, like running a program like this, just no ball. Do that stuff.
Yeah.
It'll help out everywhere. Yeah.
So I liken this to, like, I don't want to, it reminds me of Dan Mullen. Like, Dan Mullen still knows ball, knew ball very well when he was a prolific offensive coordinator for Florida, you know, during the Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer reign. I mean, he was as good as it got. He went to Mississippi State and was a fantastic head coach there. Took them to, I think he was Dak's head coach. Like, they were ranked number one in the country for a while. Like, he did a phenomenal job.
At a shithole.
At a dump. And then one of the hardest places to win. And then goes back to Florida and doesn't want to play the game. Like, doesn't know how to play the game almost at that level. And I wonder if DeBoer is potentially going to be the same guy. Now, again, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's not like Washington didn't have good recruiting classes. It's not like, you know what I mean? It's not like he couldn't identify talent, but it just goes up another level, man. When you go from, even in the SEC, you go from Mississippi State to Florida, that's a massive leap. You go from Washington to Alabama and you're following Nick Saban. And I think that's the part. That's the part. It's like, I don't think Kalen DeBoer isn't good enough to be Alabama's head coach in a vacuum, but to follow Nick Saban is like, it is truly, you said it before, like, it's an impossible situation. You could win 5 national championships and people would still be like, you're not as good as the guy that came before you.
And had like, 6. Like, you have to win 6.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you just listen, if you're DeBoer, there's no other answer. But you take that job and you
100%.
Like, I'll find out what they're paying me when I show up. Like, that's, I'm like, just don't even send me the plane. I'll buy my plane ticket. Like, I'll meet you there. Like, save the gas money.
Gas money.
But I just wonder, like, I don't know. I think it's going to be fascinating. And, you know, for Washington, as we kind of spin it back to the Big Ten, like, I thought they recovered really nicely with the Jed Fish hire.
They did.
Fish, again, didn't hesitate, shouldn't have hesitated. Very smart move.
Got out of the Big 12, right? He got into the Super Conference.
I mean, he did. He cashed in on making Arizona relevant. That is a smart man. That is. Nobody knows what's under the hood at that program like the head coach. And if he's like, I can get out of here and get one of these jobs locked up, I'm doing it. Good on him. I think Fish is a tremendous, tremendous hire. I don't know. It's hard to say whether it's an upgrade or a downgrade or anything. I think it was a rock solid rebound for a program that probably did not expect to lose its head coach this year.
No, like, it was, there were probably 2 programs that were going to give him a call that they were afraid of, and Alabama wasn't one of them. So like absolutely no, it's coming, right? So yeah, I'm excited. And with all of these, you know, coaches we've mentioned in the Big Ten, it is an insane situation. You know, we already mentioned that the quality of coaches is so high. I just wonder how much, because the conferences are bigger now, and every year there are going to be 3 to 4 teams in the playoffs. Like I wonder how short the leashes get for a summer. You know, it's like, you got to get there or like you're done. There's no like 5-year build here anymore. Like it's like with the transfer portal and the money we give you, get to the playoff. And if you don't, there's going to be no more James Franklin hanging around, you know, like they'll move on. People will move on.
Yeah. I think there's probably 6 to 7 programs in the Big Ten that fit that bill. And that's if you, and I'm not even super convinced Washington actually fits that bill, but Washington, Oregon, the 4 teams basically that came from the Pac-12, I think, I'm going to take UCLA out of there. I'm not sure that their fan base actually cares. Washington, Oregon, USC. Yeah. Washington, Oregon, USC, I think are right there on the cusp of that. And then Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. I think those 6 are probably sitting there today thinking we should be in the playoff discussion, if not in the playoff, just about every year. Like that's probably how those programs are thinking. And I think that next tier down is, in all honesty, is probably Michigan State, I think, is in that next tier where they're not saying just about every year, but I mean, they should be, if you're in the Big Ten, you probably should get 3 teams in, and Michigan State should be like, listen, we should be in that 3-team discussion. I don't know, once every 4 years.
That's
like,
right.
Is that a wild thing to say? Like, I don't think that's a crazy statement to make. I think they feel that way. I'd imagine Wisconsin probably feels that way.
Yep.
And then you might, I don't know. I hate to even give Iowa that level of credit. Maybe UCLA, I guess.
Whoa. Is that I think your microphone got really crazy. I'll fill in while Austin figures this out. Yeah, your
sound's coming through.
Oh, now you're here. Welcome back.
Okay, we're back.
I would say Nebraska is the only other team that fits that, willing to move on quickly if it's not working out situation.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I think everybody else, you've still got some serious leash. And some of them, dude, I think some are just going to be happy to be in the conference. And maybe even they're just like pigs waiting to slaughter because they know that there's a reduction in force coming to the Big Ten at some point.
Dude, also, shout out to the board. I got to see his contract to see how what his buyout is, because he's going to get fired, right? Like, so,
yeah,
like, and that's not a knock on him. It's just, it's going to happen. I wonder how much he gets to get paid. Like, that's the goal, right? To get canned and get paid to not work. Like, that is truly the dream.
Oh, yeah. Well, they only had to pay him $12 million. Damn. Let's see here. Nope, that's his contract extension. I was trying to find this. Let's see here. Da-da-da-da-da. I want the terms. About 12. Okay, nope.
We're redlining this in real time.
Washington officials. Yep, okay. Now, they still don't know, but he was offered $9+ million by Washington. So it stands to reason that he's probably making. Yeah.
I need a little more from the Huskies there, to be honest. That's kind of weak.
Yeah.
He just took you to the championship, guys. Like, have some respect. You know, you got to throw a dumb number at a guy like that. You're not, I mean, they'd like to think that they've always been 90s Washington blue blood, but like, the come up is recent. It's been a month. They need to, you know, respect it and find more millions to pay people.
Kalen was making pennies at Washington. He was only making $4.2 million. That's
My God.
Level up, dude. It's like, no wonder.
We're mad at you.
Are you joking? Like, oh my God. They're like, here's 10. Remember that house you had? Here's 3 of them. Like,
he's like, geez, 10 what? Because yeah. I don't mean $1 million.
Yeah, there's no chance you mean what you think you mean. It was such a no-brainer.
Do you remember when Texas tried to poach Saban? God, it would have been like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And like the numbers that were being, they were.
Yeah.
Because here's they actually
offered $15 million a year.
They
My
offered
goodness.
Him money that like, they offered him stuff that like, it was stupid. And like, it was stupid for Saban to not take it, but it was like, because it was so ridiculous. But at the same time, it was like, you guys are coming across as a little too desperate. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. That's like,
please, baby.
Yeah. That's like, I don't know what else, other stuff you're going to be doing that's out of pocket if you're throwing that type of money around. So,
yeah, I think it's fun. By the way, just we're talking about coach contracts and stuff. It is so funny how thirsty Harbaugh is for this Chargers job. I cannot wait
to get out of Michigan, dude.
I cannot wait to see what he gets paid, because it will be really funny to me. I don't know that this would happen, but
less? Yeah,
if it was, yeah, or if it was like nine, if it was like the same,
it will be. Michigan has to throw the bank at this dude. They know. You know, like they are aware of the situation.
Yeah. I also think it's funny that I've heard a couple different angles to this, but like, he's seeking some type of immunity in his contract for if and when the NCAA comes to get him, that Michigan can't fire him.
I think
it's funny, but the justification I've heard is that he's not seeking immunity. He's seeking like a 3-person panel. And not basically like, he just doesn't want Ward Manuel to be able to fire him, which I think is
okay.
Awesome. First of all, awesome. It's awesome that Michigan's choosing to stand by that
athletic director.
Whatever it is. Yeah. Thank you. Athletic director who has run beeline out of town.
He ran the worst basketball coach since Tommy Amaker.
Yeah, ran their hockey coach out of town, who was like one of the best, like a legend there.
Well, who also was apprised of multiple NCAA and like violations, COVID.
So good stuff. Good stuff going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
female harassment.
It's funny that that's the guy that they're standing behind. Instead of Harbaugh, even though I don't know. I actually respect the hell out of him for being like, yeah, you guys can give. It's like, how about you guys be my backup? You give me $12 million a year, and that guy can't fire me. He's like, he's basically making it so that it's the greatest fallback plan of all time, and he'll just go do the same thing again next year if he does end up coming back to Michigan. I kind of maybe take that back. I think if he ends up in Michigan, I'm not sure. Like, I mean, I don't know how many times there's ever been 8 open head coaching jobs in the NFL.
If he doesn't get one, they don't want you, man. Like,
yeah, bro, that's 25% of the league. Like,
doesn't want you.
Yeah. Then yeah. At which point, like, you know, just hang out, dude. Like, just mail it in. Like, mailing it in. You're still gonna win 10 games a year every single year, no matter what you do.
But like, back up. Okay, so the NCAA is gonna like lay some heavy violate. Like, there's no way that there's,
I mean, yeah, I don't happen know. Probably. I hope so.
Did we just see what happened to Florida State? Like, that
they
was
lost,
just for like
they lost
regular
five scholarships.
Cheating. That was regular cheating.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm just saying there are enough people who do not like Harbaugh's antics in that place, and are gonna make it miserable for him. So I guess what Michigan's gonna be paying, knowingly overpaying a guy to not work. Like, they know that will happen, and they don't know for how long he won't work.
Basically, I don't know, man. I am just with the if they are gonna get punished. Like, I hope they do. And if they don't, I hope Michigan State hires 50 scouts to go to. Like, I want to scout. I want to scout at every game.
I have a question. Okay, that is fair. And you know what? I hope everyone starts doing it even harder.
Yeah. But cheat more.
It's just the lamest cheating too. It's so Michigan.
Yeah. Or just don't get caught.
Well, yeah. Or do. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, clearly it doesn't. It really genuinely, it might not. Like, it really might. If the only punishment they get is like losing scholarships, then everyone should cheat. Like, let's just give each other each other's signals. Like, just level the playing field completely.
It is a bit of a yeah. It is, well, it has been, if nothing, an entertaining saga to watch this play out in real time. And I don't want people to forget. Here's the thing I want you to remember, that if you just search hard enough, that Michigan fan in your life wanted Matt Campbell at the University of Michigan. That was not a small group of people that wanted Harbaugh. Yeah. That was the majority of Michigan social media. And you can say it's overstated, but it wasn't.
There's plenty of screenshots.
Suit man
for that.
I mean, people changed their usernames. They wanted Matt Campbell so bad. Matt Campbell of people, like, have some self-respect, guys.
I agree.
All right, should we take a break and talk some hoops?
Oh, John, if we must. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. And we're back.
Hey, you know what we forgot to do? We forgot to thank the Sarahs for rocking it.
Oh, good point. Thank you, Sarahs. As always, you guys rule. You always, every year, they're the best episode.
Yeah, it used to be embarrassing, but now it's just cool. Thank you for carrying us through over the holiday. And since we've left, there have been a handful of games that have taken place. I don't think we're going to rehash all of them. I think maybe we should just quickly go through. The only ones that I care to talk about are the 73-55 win over Rutgers, where Steven Isso scored on like a nasty little saucy play and got the roll for an and one, and then converted the free throw, which I'm going to be honest, was not so sure he was capable of, and he just drained it. And that was a really, really, probably one of the coolest moments of the season.
Yeah, that's why he was let back in the house afterwards, I think, because he made the free throw. If he had missed, I think he might have been off the team.
Yeah, it was really cool to see how, like, the team, it's not, like, a joke. Like, they actually respect him and want him to succeed, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so the next game, 76-66 win over a kind of a bummer Minnesota team, but maybe I'm just, you know, bias, but I think Ben Johnson's a really good coach. Regardless, they got the silver lining here is it was a close game the entire time. It probably shouldn't have been, but Michigan State got practice in winning time against a bad team. And that's always good because Michigan State has up to this point only played good teams when it became winning time. And that is, you would like to have thought that they would have cashed in on one of them, but they haven't. So you got to start seeing the ball go in from a winning time perspective to start to believe you can do it. And they did. And that carried over to the next game, 61-59 win at Maryland, where again, had another winning time opportunity against a better team. I will note Maryland is bad, but again, it is put in the right direction. Austin, before we dive in on the specifics of maybe the Minnesota and Maryland games, I'm going to take the temperature of you. How are you feeling about Michigan State basketball?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's hard to complain at this point about a 3-game in-conference win streak. No matter who it's against, no matter the point in the season, that's a nice thing, especially bouncing back from a close road loss at a top 10 school and then, a not great road loss against Northwestern. Listen, not that long ago, we were sitting here at, I guess it would have been 9-7, 1-3 1-4 in the conference.
That's bad.
And the path towards the NCAA tournament could have gotten pretty narrow there. And honestly, if you look at the rest of the slate, not a ton of chances left for kind of marquee wins. Michigan State obviously has that big time win against Baylor early in the season. But right now, as you look across, kind of the rest of the slate that they've played so far, it's a lot of losses to good teams, especially as you go back to the beginning of the year, but not a lot of highlights in terms of like really good wins against quality teams. And they might have just racked up, you know, a couple of maybe not quality wins, but at least confidence builders. And, you know, especially this one against Maryland, like you said, probably shouldn't have been as close as it was. Had chances to give it away, certainly. But, you know, this was, I actually found this really interesting stat that Michigan State's 61-59 victory at Maryland was its first win by single digits all season.
Wow.
Michigan State is now 1-5 in those games. The other margins of victory, 23-20, 32-31, 24-17, 44-12, 31-18-10. But that last part, Michigan State is now 1-5 in those one possession games or single digit games. That's bad.
Like, but that they saw the ball go in a couple times against, you know, in winning times. So
yeah, but no, and that's good. But mm-hmm. I do think that if there's one stat they need to try and correct, in my opinion, it's that one, because we've seen this from them. I kind of feel like the entire year, where especially in those early marquee games, you know, they got down and then they fought back so hard to get so close, and then they ultimately lost. So like they're playing tough in winning time, but they can't get over the hump. I guess they're a really good team. And, you know, maybe they exercise some of those demons at, again, not a good Maryland team, but on the road at Maryland, they certainly have a chance to add another big one this Friday. But honestly, at this point, I can't complain too much about the results we've seen. We could talk more about the team at large, but if you want to dive in specifically here, we can do that too.
I think any revelations that have taken place, we've talked about what the team has to do to become a true contender. Well, one thing happened in the Maryland game that kind of popped off the screen to me is that we finally saw Trey Holloman play well on the road against a real team. And that if that is a thing, then that changes the trajectory, because you are allowed, that means AJ Hogard, maybe not Tyson Walker, but Jaden Akins, they can have not great games, which is what happened. Jaden Akins had not a great game, and that's a relief. That means, you know, the margin for error hasn't gotten bigger, and like that is huge in my opinion. So it's not to say that we can expect this from Trey Holland, but now we know he's capable of it. So that jumped out to me a little bit. Fortunately, like Jaden Akins is going to have to like figure it out, because if he doesn't, then I'm just not so sure. Even if Tyson Walker is hitting on all cylinders, AJ Hogard, Malik Hall, I don't know. I don't think that group of three is enough to truly contend. So, I think you need those and Akins, and probably a good game from someone off the bench to be a contender, but we're going in the right direction, I guess is my point.
Yeah. And one thing I do want to put my hand up and acknowledge is Malik Hall.
Yeah, dude.
He's having his best statistical season in most facets this year by like a decent amount. He's averaging first time in his career, he's averaging double digits in terms of scoring. He's averaging 5 rebounds a game. He's never averaged more than like 4.5 before. Not a good shooting year. His career actually lowest 3-point shooting percentage. But he's just been Mr. Consistent.
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off, but I think he's almost there to consistent. And when he's not, it truly jumps off the page. And that's what happened maybe like 5 games ago. And put up an egg against me. Was it Illinois? And it was like, holy moly, that can't happen. And then you realize how invaluable Malik Hall is.
Yeah, it was Northwestern. He didn't score against Northwestern. But I think that inherently is, and honestly, actually, before I even go into that, shout out to, he's been basically crushing since he played against Indiana State. His last, 7 games, 18-24-0, 14-15-16-12, like played really well, is arguably maybe the second most important offensive player right now because of what he can do in the front court. That is not a good thing.
No, like, it's very good, like, but it's not the same time, right?
I'm glad that someone's doing it, but you would have really hoped that it was, honestly, probably Xavier Booker or maybe Matty Sissoko or Cooper had done something to take an offensive step forward, or Colin Carr was playing small ball four or something. But I'm glad Malik Hall has been there as a catch-all. He's played really, really well, deserves a ton of credit. But if we really want to like assess, like, you know, listen, it's about to be February. There's only so many
report time. We're halfway home.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 games left. Okay. Mm-hmm. If this team is going to turn into a team that is remotely interesting in March, that back half of the roster needs to figure it out pretty much right away. And like you said, Trey Holloman, great step forward against Maryland. Good win. Now they need to do that in one of these marquee games that they've got coming up, because in the next 2 weeks, playing on the road at a very good Wisconsin team this Friday.
Yep.
And then they do have the rematch against an Illinois team that they played very well on the road, and they get them at home in the second week of February. So they also go to Purdue at the very end of the season, but that's it right now in terms of chances for marquee wins.
And that Illinois team is going to have Terrence Shannon Jr. Which they did not before. So, you know, if we want to take a midseason report, this team is nowhere near we thought they'd be. Let's just call it out.
Fact.
Okay. It sucks. That said, it's not all lost. I mean, I may be squinting, but I do know that there is a team that can contend for a national championship in there. I know it because I saw it, and everyone here did too. Everyone listening, against Baylor. Mm-hmm. Baylor's a real team. They've had a couple mishaps, but I'm telling you right now, it's one of the best teams in the country. So, you got Baylor. That win is there. You've seen them put flashes together against some of these other teams. They're starting to gut out wins. The fact that it's taken this long for a team with five guys who are like 21 and older is pretty disappointing. But the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. Second best time is right now. So let's figure it out. And that's what they're starting to do. And the last time they played Wisconsin, I don't know if anyone blacked it out. It was the most disappointed I had been in a Michigan State basketball team in a very long time. And the reason was because they got absolutely dominated on the boards. They were out-toughed. They didn't get the 50-50 balls. It was a home game. It was the first Big Ten game. It was a game that Michigan State, I think, was in the position that where they thought that they were better than they were, because they had lost close to some teams. You know, it's like this team has come a long way since then. If they want to be for real, you win on the road in the Kohl Center and get the attention of people, right? And then you set yourself up for some success here with some less than average Big Ten teams through the remainder of the schedule. It's all right there for them. It really is. It's just a matter if they grab it or not.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I think the thing we've been saying all season too is they still have Tyson Walker. I mean, Tyson Walker's playing out of his freaking mind, man. He's averaging almost 20 points a game. He's so much fun to watch. Shooting 40% from three.
He finishes so well. It's just, we take it for granted his degree of difficulty at the rim, considering his size, and it looks so nonchalant. It's incredibly high difficulty shots. And I mean, I'm sorry to cut you up, but it's just like, I think the other thing that people maybe don't realize is that right now he's 40th on Michigan State's all-time leading scoring list. He's played 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
Like that. So he's putting up buckets. And I mean, again, I think I named off a couple of them, but coming up, he's going to be passing Shannon Brown, Kelvin Torbert, Alan Anderson, Adrian Payne. Like these, again, these are the names. And that's going to be, you know, done in 3 years, not four. So I think we maybe I have been taking for granted that we have a good, not a great, but we have a really good, and we haven't had that on a roster since the cash of Xavier Tillman, to be honest. Aaron Henry was a dog, but I don't, he's not like nice like Tyson.
No, very different player. Like he was nice like Tyson on the defensive end. He locked everybody down. Sure. But he's the best offensive player we've had since then, for sure. I don't think it's even close. I do think that he's the type of guy that can get, that can take that scoring average and go from 19.7 to 25.7 in the tournament and just single-handedly carry you into the second weekend at least. So you just gotta get there. But you're right. Like the team, it's the same team that we looked at on day one and said this team can win the national championship if they do X, Y, and Z. And what we counted on was improvement, internal improvement, and some things, bigger contributions from freshmen than we've probably seen consistently, anyways. And those things are maybe starting to come together a little bit. Like you said, if you squint, you can see where it's still at. Mm-hmm. I think you will learn. Yeah, I don't know. There's the opportunity to learn quite a bit on Friday night because MSU is going to have been off for a handful of days. They know what's in front of them. Always been an impossible place to win. And it's a very good Wisconsin team that is deep, that's multifaceted. They do have some bad losses. Actually, really only one really gnarly loss on the schedule, which was pretty recently at Penn State.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not great. You got to be careful in the Big Ten right now because, there are wins to be had, but some of the losses can be gnarly if you're not paying attention one night,
Absolutely.
One other quick thing while you're talking, I was pulling up a text from my buddy Cam, who he said, Tyson Walker is like LaCroix Kemba. Like he tastes vaguely like Kemba if you're not eating anything else, but there's like a steal and a cross and pull jumper and you can just like close your eyes and you can taste it a little bit. and that made a lot of sense to me in real time. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone else, but I was like, yeah, I could feel that. I could see Tyson Walker. Kemba took him to all the way, but there's some Diet Coke in there for Tyson. You know what I mean? Like you could see, he could run four off. Maybe not six.
Yeah.
You could run
Dude, he was a big part of the reason why they ran off three last year.
Two, but yeah. He lost. He lost it in the Sweet 16.
No, we lost in the Elite Eight.
We did not. We did not. We lost in the Sweet 16.
I don't buy it.
Well, I will say.
Felt like it. Felt like we won three.
Quick shout out while we're talking stats. I know we're all over the place here, so bear with us. But Malik Hall, 49th MSU player to score 1,000 points.
Wow.
4.5 years, but take it. And Hoggard is knocking on the door here. He's only 34 points away from being a 1,000-point scorer in 4 years. That is I was impressed when I saw that. I was not aware that he was that close.
Hmm. It's been around a while.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, I don't know. It's his fourth year of playing like significant minutes, basically, right? I mean, he's been a double-digit minute guy since he was a true freshman. So
it was a rough start as a freshman.
It was a rough start, but oh my god, was it ever?
10th all-time in MSU career assists right now too. Like, it's not a bad list that he's on right now.
He's not at all.
It's right there.
Damn, I really thought we made the Elite Eight last year. That's how long that Kansas State game was.
We
won it and then made it.
Well, and that's the step that Tyson Walker needs to take, and it's not his step to take. It's the rest of the team's step to take.
He
won how many games for MSU last year that the team lost?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, the Iowa game. I'm trying to think of how many times he put up 30 and was in winning time making every clutch shot. And it's like, what do you want from him? You got other guys to do something, okay? So that's the step these guys can take because he's proven he can turn it on against anybody. It's everybody else. So big opportunity against Wisconsin, like we were talking about. And then you kind of regather yourself from there. And and say, okay, rev up the engine, start over. You got a home game against Michigan. You'd like to think you're going to be up for that. A home game against Maryland, got to win that one. Away game against Minnesota is a nice tune-up for a home game against Illinois. So, you know, it's a nice little four-game test after the Wisconsin one to see where you're really at.
Yeah. I mean, surely that Michigan-Michigan State game is going to be between two ranked teams, right?
Well, no, I will say Michigan State got votes this week. so, I mean, it's a little embarrassing that that's where we're at, but I will say, like, they're not as far away as I think some people think. I really believe they're close. So we'll see.
That was more of my way of saying, calling people's attention to the fact that Michigan after tonight is about to be five games under 500.
Yeah. I mean, they're horrible. And I need to say the Doug McDaniel suspension is an embarrassment.
That's a joke.
Like, and no one can convince me that, like, they're doing right by the student athlete by saying, you know what? I bet the problem was your away games. That's why you weren't doing well in class. Even though everyone else on your team and every other player in the athletic department is seemingly not having this issue, that's the reason. Like, come on. Like, if you're serious about it, be serious about it, or don't. But, like, don't walk the line. He's always finding those loopholes, those Wolverines.
Yeah, it was well done on their part, but yeah, I guess you can't have it all. I guess it's just a real shame. All right, John.
That's all I got.
It's good to be back. This was fun. Thank you guys for dealing with our extended sabbatical. We enjoyed our time off, but listen, it's winning time in basketball now, so we're back. Thanks as always for sticking with us, though. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.